Lecture 5, Intrapersonal Motives.
As we have seen, some differences in people's personalities come down to differences in their motivational traits. People differ motivationally in many ways, but we focused specifically on the degree to which people are motivated to affiliate, to achieve, and to exert power or influence over other people. Despite their differences, all of these motives involve the degree to which people desire to get something to happen in the external world. You can't fulfill your desire to affiliate unless other people interact with you. You can't fulfill your motivation to achieve unless you actually accomplish something. And you can't fulfill your power motivation unless you can influence other people to behave like you want them to. These motives are all about getting things that are important to you. And there are many other motives that focus on obtaining various outcomes. People are motivated to be safe and secure, and they have safety only if they behave in ways that actually enhance their security. People are motivated to be accepted rather than rejected by other people, and they can satisfy their motive for acceptance only if other people accept them. People are motivated to obtain social approval, and they satisfy their desire for approval only if they get it. All of these motives can be fulfilled only if people obtain the outcome or the event that they're motivated to get. Affiliation, success, power, safety, approval, acceptance, or whatever. But from the beginnings of the scientific study of personality, researchers have also been interested in a rather different set of motives that are focused on maintaining certain psychological states. That is, instead of trying to obtain some external outcome, such as acceptance or influence or approval, these motives focus on maintaining a desired psychological state inside the person. For example, some psychologists have suggested that people are motivated to maintain consistency among their various thoughts. And others have suggested that people are motivated to maintain a sense of high self-esteem or motivated to be authentic. These motives are fundamentally different from the ones I just described because they don't involve getting anything from the outside world. Instead, these other motives can be satisfied psychologically inside the person's own mind, even if nothing else happens whatsoever. I can satisfy a motive to be cognitively consistent simply by changing my thoughts. And I can satisfy a motive to have self-esteem by changing how I evaluate myself. Now, I might behave in certain ways that will help me satisfy these motives, but the fulfillment of these motives is entirely an internal affair. A motive to maintain a desired psychological state, such as to be internally consistent or to have high self-esteem or be authentic, can be satisfied entirely within one's own mind. Because these motives involve the management of one's thoughts or emotions or other psychological states, they are called intrapsychic motives, where intrapsychic simply means within the mind. Sometimes you'll also hear them called intrapersonal motives, that is, motives that involve states within the person. These intrapsychic or intrapersonal motives are sometimes contrasted with interpersonal motives that are fulfilled only when outside conditions change or when other people behave in certain ways. The idea that intrapsychic motives are important in understanding personality and behavior was first championed by Sigmund Freud. In fact, Freud's entire theory of personality involves the ways in which people manage their intrapsychic motives, with a focus on processes that operate outside of conscious awareness. Most contemporary psychological scientists don't give much credence to Freud's ideas, but he certainly played a very important role in the history of the study of personality. So I want to say a few things about his ideas about motivation here, and then we'll return to Freud when we discuss non-conscious processes later. As you may know, Freud was not a psychologist. He was a physician with a specialty in neurology, the field of medicine that treats disorders of the brain and other parts of the nervous system. In his medical practice, Freud became particularly interested in patients who came in with physical problems that didn't seem to have any physical or medical basis. So a patient might come in with a paralysis of her arm, even though Freud couldn't find anything neurological wrong with her. In working with these patients, Freud had the insight that these disorders might have psychological causes, that stress or trauma or some other psychological issue might be creating a physical problem. At the time, this was a novel and very important insight. We talk a lot today about the relationship between mind and body, but at the time, this was a new idea. Over the course of his career, Freud developed a theory of personality, known as psychoanalytic theory, to explain these symptoms. And he also developed a method of psychotherapy, called psychoanalysis, to try to treat them. And over time, psychoanalytic theory broadened and broadened to encompass much more than just the psychological causes of certain medical problems. The crux of Freud's theory was that personality can be understood as a person's way of dealing with basic instincts, especially instincts related to sex and aggression. Freud was strongly influenced by Darwin's ideas about evolution, and he started thinking about the challenges of being a species of animal that lives in civilized society. On one hand, we have many of the same urges and inclinations as other animals, but unlike other animals, we're expected to restrain our animalistic urges and behave in a civilized fashion. And in Freud's thinking, that conflict was a primary source of people's psychological problems. Whereas other animals are more or less free to mate or respond aggressively whenever they want, human society puts limits on our behavior. Yet according to Freud, we still have drives for sex and for aggression that we need to satisfy somehow. People come up with different ways of dealing with their animalistic urges. And according to Freud, these differences create differences in personality. Some ways of managing these motives work better than others, and people who can't manage them successfully end up with psychological problems. Now, as I said, most behavioral scientists don't put much stock in the details of Freud's theory, particularly the idea that sex and aggression lie at the root of personality. But some of them do resonate to the idea that a good deal of behavior may arise from intrapsychic processes that are trying to satisfy basic motives of one kind or another. And just as Freud explained behavior in terms of people's efforts to manage intrapsychic conflicts involving motives for sex and aggression, many researchers today explain behavior in terms of people's efforts to satisfy a variety of other intrapsychic motives. So Freud's idea that people are trying to satisfy internal motives in intrapsychic waves made its way into psychology more generally. To preview where we're going in this lecture, I'm going to talk about how intrapsychic motives have been linked to personality. But in the end, I'm going to point out some problems with these ideas, because I think that people overestimate the role that these kinds of motives play in personality and behavior. Several perspectives in psychology are based on the idea that people are motivated to maintain internal psychological consistency. Consistency among their various beliefs, consistency between their attitudes and their behavior, and consistency between their own views of themselves and other people's views of them. This is an intrapsychic motive in the sense that the motive is fulfilled as long as people can maintain consistency in their own mind. Nothing in particular has to happen in the outside world. The person doesn't have to get anything or do anything or obtain any particular outcome in order for the motive for psychological consistency to be fulfilled. One early theory of this sort was proposed by Prescott Leckie, who taught at Columbia University in the 1920s and 30s. Leckie suggested that people possess a motive that he called striving for unity, by which he meant unity or consistency among people's thoughts about themselves. According to Leckie, this motive leads people to process information about themselves in a way that maintains internal consistency. So, for example, people tend to resist or distort or even deny information that is inconsistent with their ideas about themselves. And they do this in order to maintain psychological unity in their self-image. Essentially, Leckie said that we have a motive to maintain an internally consistent personality, and our behavior often reflects efforts to maintain that consistency. A similar idea appears in several other theories. For example, I suspect that you have heard the term cognitive dissonance, which is filtered down from social psychology to everyday use. Cognitive dissonance theory proposes that people have a motive to maintain consistency among their thoughts. According to the theory, people find inconsistency troubling, so they change their thoughts and behaviors to make them consistent. And according to dissonance theory, this is an important motive that underlies many of people's behaviors and attitudes. Similarly, self-verification theory proposes that people are motivated to maintain their current views of themselves. It says that once you see yourself as a certain kind of person, you're motivated to behave in ways that help to maintain your self-views. Each of these theories involves an intrapsychic motive to maintain a certain sort of psychological consistency. And each one suggests that we can understand people's behavior and personality by considering this internal motive. But the idea that we have a basic intrapsychic motive to be internally consistent in our own mind has a couple of problems. Basic motives almost certainly evolved as part of human nature because they provided some advantage to survival and reproduction throughout human evolution. Motives to affiliate, to achieve, to be accepted, and to influence other people certainly had practical benefits, for example. But what is the benefit of internal cognitive consistency for its own sake? Natural selection would have presumably favored whatever action is beneficial at the time, without regard for whether that action is consistent with what you did yesterday, or consistent with your thoughts, or consistent with your self-image. In fact, from an evolutionary standpoint, being consistent would often be less effective than being flexible and even inconsistent. Evolution would not have cared whether organisms felt consistent inside, only whether they took actions that increased the likelihood of survival and reproduction. I'm not saying that people don't generally prefer to be consistent rather than inconsistent. I'm simply saying that a motive for consistency is not likely to be a basic, evolved motive that underlies a great deal of human behavior. Yet people do seem to prefer consistency. So why would people want to behave consistently rather than inconsistently if it's not in the service of some intrapsychic motive to be consistent? The short answer is that people are motivated to behave consistently because other people expect them to. We want other people to be predictable and consistent, and we don't like people who are inconsistent and hypocritical. So when people are motivated to be consistent, it's probably not because of some intrapsychic motive to maintain internal consistency or to avoid cognitive dissonance. Rather, it's probably because being consistent helps them maintain good social relationships and obtain rewards from other people. Let me describe just one study that supports this interpersonal interpretation of the motive for consistency. A good deal of research has shown that when people do something that they actually don't believe in, something that goes against their beliefs or attitudes. They sometimes change their beliefs to match their behavior. This finding has generally been interpreted in terms of the motive to avoid cognitive dissonance, arguing that people change their beliefs to eliminate the inconsistency between their beliefs and their behavior. But other research has found that this effect occurred only when research participants reported their belief to other people who had witnessed them behave in a way that was inconsistent with their belief. When participants reported their belief to someone who didn't know how the participant had behaved, they didn't change their belief to make it consistent with their behavior. Now, if participants were changing their beliefs to maintain intrapsychic cognitive consistency, it shouldn't matter whether other people knew how the participant had behaved. But it did matter, which suggests that participants were trying to maintain internal consistency, but rather they were motivated to look consistent to other people. If you know that I behaved in a certain way, I'll look hypocritical or deceptive or mentally unstable if I then express a belief that's inconsistent with how I acted. So people strive to be consistent because of the social costs of being viewed as inconsistent. This finding offers a much different view of human motivation than the idea that people have an intrapsychic motive for consistency. Rather than being motivated by internal pressures to be consistent, behavior is motivated by a desire to appear consistent to other people, because being consistent is rewarded and being inconsistent is punished. There doesn't seem to be a motive in the human personality that inherently pushes us toward consistency for its own sake. Again, this doesn't mean that people aren't motivated to be consistent. They are. But they're not motivated to be consistent by an intrapsychic motive, as these theories suggest. We're going to return to this issue in a later lecture. For another example of a motive that has been generally assumed to be intrapsychic, but that is probably interpersonal, let's look at the self-esteem motive. Many theorists have suggested that people are motivated to behave in ways that maintain and increase their self-esteem. People are motivated to evaluate themselves positively. And in fact, some writers have suggested that people have a basic need for self-esteem that motivates a great deal of their behavior. And it's easy to see why people might think that. People certainly do prefer to behave in ways that make them feel good about themselves. And on top of that, people who are low in self-esteem have more problems than people who are high in self-esteem. People low in self-esteem tend to be less happy, and they're less satisfied with life. And they do more poorly in school and at work. And they have more problems such as alcohol and drug use. So maybe, the argument goes, people with low self-esteem have these kinds of problems because their internal need for self-esteem isn't being met. Like the motive for psychological consistency, this motive for self-esteem has usually been conceptualized as intrapsychic. It operates entirely inside a person's head, more or less irrespective of their actual outcomes. According to the intrapsychic approach to self-esteem, people are seeking to evaluate themselves positively, and so they try to behave in ways that make them feel good about themselves. And they satisfy this internal motive when their self-esteem reaches some particular level. But why would people have a basic motive that leads them to pursue self-esteem? Sure, people prefer to feel good rather than bad about themselves, but there's not much evidence that simply feeling good about oneself is inherently beneficial, or that a desire for self-esteem motivates behavior. So, why would an intrapsychic motive for self-esteem have emerged as a fundamental part of human nature? In my view, it didn't. My reading of the literature of the research evidence suggests that people do not have a fundamental motive to seek self-esteem. As with the consistency motives, the desire for self-esteem seems to reflect an interpersonal process rather than an intrapsychic one. Instead of being motivated to pursue self-esteem for its own sake, people appear to be motivated to be accepted by other people, to do things that increase their value to other people, so that they will be socially accepted and obtain a variety of social rewards. But because most of the things people do that lead others to accept them are also things that make them feel good about themselves, there's a natural link between being valued and accepted by other people and having higher self-esteem. So when people are accepted, their self-esteem goes up. But the underlying motive appears to be an interpersonal motive to be accepted rather than an intrapsychic motive just to evaluate oneself positively. Anything that's a basic motive has to motivate behaviors that provide beneficial outcomes for people. But unlike the motive to be valued and accepted, which has clear benefits across many areas of life, just feeling good about yourself doesn't really seem to do much of anything other than just make yourself feel good. This reinterpretation of the self-esteem motive helps us understand differences between people who have low versus high self-esteem better than the notion that people are inherently motivated to have high self-esteem. For example, people who are higher in self-esteem tend to be happier and more satisfied with life than people who have low self-esteem, and they tend to be lower in depression, anxiety, and guilt. But this isn't because people need self-esteem to be happy and emotionally well-adjusted, as some psychologists have suggested. Instead, it's because people who feel that they are valued and accepted by other people and who have characteristics that promote social acceptance and good relationships are understandably happier than people who don't think that others value and accept them as much as they would like. People with high self-esteem aren't happy because they are fulfilling a motive to have self-esteem. They're happy because they're accepted by other people. In addition, we know that people who are higher in self-esteem do better in many areas of life than those who are lower in self-esteem. High self-esteem people tend to do better in school. They're more successful at work. They accomplish more. And they have more satisfying relationships with other people. These findings have led some psychologists to conclude that people are motivated to pursue self-esteem because it somehow promotes achievement and success. But the causal arrow actually points in the other direction. Performing well and being successful and having good relationships make people feel more valued and accepted, so they feel better about themselves. Self-esteem is an effect of behaving in socially desirable ways. It's not the cause of positive behaviors. Self-esteem is usually viewed as an important personality characteristic, so we'll go into more detail about self-esteem later. To conclude this lecture, let me mention one other intrapsychic motive that has been discussed a great deal, and that's the authenticity motive. Many theorists, especially those coming from the humanistic perspective in psychology, such as Carl Rogers and Abraham Maslow, believe that people have an intrapsychic motive to be authentic. That is, they suggest that people have a motive to act congruently with their values and beliefs and motives and personality dispositions. And they also assume that being authentic leads people to be more psychologically adjusted than being inauthentic. Now, in this view, authenticity is an intrapsychic motive in the sense that it's not aimed at achieving any tangible outcomes from the outside world. The focal goal of the authenticity motive is simply to behave congruently with one's true self. Although authenticity involves behaving consistently with who you really are, let me stress that it's quite different from cognitive consistency. Cognitive consistency approaches, such as dissonance theory, propose that people are motivated to maintain consistent thoughts, whether or not those thoughts are accurate or authentic. In fact, cognitive dissonance theory hypothesizes that the motive for consistency is sometimes fulfilled by changing one's thoughts or behavior in a way that's actually less authentic. So the motive for authenticity is quite different than the motive for consistency. Authenticity is a difficult motive to study because, as we'll discuss later in the course, it's very hard to know what people are really and truly like. So it's hard to know when they're being themselves. Even so, just as we did for cognitive consistency and self-esteem, we can raise questions about whether people have an intrapsychic motive to be authentic. Now, I'm not saying that authenticity isn't important or that people don't strive for authenticity. But the source of the motive to be authentic seems to come from outside the person, from the social world, rather than from some inherent intrapsychic need to be authentic for its own sake. To get along with each other, we all have to have a reasonably clear picture of who we're dealing with, what other people are like, what they believe, what their intentions are. And other people want to have a reasonably clear sense about us as well. People who seem disingenuous or hypocritical or dishonest are problematic. We don't know what to expect from them, whether to trust them, how to respond. Because everybody needs to understand everybody else as well as possible, all of us are under a good deal of social pressure to be ourselves, to be honest, to let other people know who we are and where we stand. Of course, nobody is genuine all the time, and we shouldn't be. Sometimes being honest would be rude and hurtful. But overall, people are supposed to be who and what they claim to be. So all of us want other people to be authentic. And when we catch them being ingenuous, things fall apart. So yes, people are motivated to be authentic. But it's mostly for interpersonal reasons, because being viewed as a fake creates problems for us, rather than because we have an intrapsychic authenticity motive. The bottom line of this lecture is that to understand motivational aspects of personality, it's important to distinguish between motives that focus on obtaining things from the external world, and particularly obtaining desired outcomes from other people, and motives that focus on maintaining certain desired psychological states. We need to distinguish intrapsychic from interpersonal motives. I have to admit that psychologists haven't always done a good job keeping these things straight. We have sometimes erred in explaining behavior in terms of some intrapsychic motive when an interpersonal motive was probably at work. In some ways, we have Freud to blame for that. Freud was right that we face an ongoing struggle between our basic motives and the constraints that society places on us. Those motives aren't all about sex and aggression. But all of us sometimes have the urge to do hedonistic and selfish things that run counter to society's values and norms. And each of us has to find a way to manage that tension. Where Freud went wrong, in my view, was to conclude that these conflicts play out on some intrapsychic battleground in our own minds, rather than in the lives we lead and in our relations with other people. My own view is that interpersonal motives are far more important in understanding how people behave and how they feel than intrapsychic motives are. And I think that you can see this in your own life if you think about everything that you've done over the past couple of days. Would you say that most of your behaviors the past few days were motivated by interpersonal goals, such as to affiliate with other people, to influence others, to achieve something, to be helpful, or to be valued and accepted? Or were they motivated by intrapsychic goals, such as to maintain consistent thoughts, or to have high self-esteem, or to feel authentic? Did you do what you did the past few days mostly to cause desired outcomes in your life, or simply to maintain some internal psychological state? I'm not saying that intrapsychic goals don't exist or influence behavior. We sometimes play mental shenanigans with ourselves just to feel good. Rather, I'm saying that most human behavior is motivated to obtain actual outcomes that affect the quality of life, rather than only to manage our internal thoughts and feelings. And if that's the case, then the degree to which people are motivated to obtain outcomes, such as affiliation, acceptance, achievement, success, influence, and power, tell us more about their personalities. Let me recommend a principle that I use when I'm trying to understand why somebody did something. Maybe you're trying to figure out a friend or a family member or somebody at work, or maybe you're trying to understand something about yourself. I call this the principle of interpersonal primacy, and it's this. When trying to understand a person's behavior, consider motives to obtain external and social outcomes before turning to intrapsychic motives. Basically, you ask yourself, what was the person trying to get by behaving as he or she did? What outcome, what reaction, what goal was he or she trying to obtain? Only if you can't see what the person was trying to obtain from other people and from the outside world, should you turn to considering intrapsychic motives. Because chances are, the behavior reflects a motive to obtain some tangible or social outcome.